Hi, guys. Hi. This is so... Okay, listen, we are so stoked. There's so much to talk about and there's so much to say. We only have so much time. But we are here with the last episode of season 3. We finally got it to you guys.
And don't we sound better? Don't we look amazing?
Look kind of cute.
It is because we are elevating popping perfectionism and taking it to a new level, the next level. And we're super excited for everyone to like join along. Hope you will like watch the video. And I mean, it's going to be kind of weird that we can watch that now and like see us.
Yeah, I know. Because if you guys have been listening, we've had video. But it's been really rough. And you can only watch it if it's on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And it was in my bedroom. Obviously, we're not in my bedroom now. We're here in a studio, which we're so excited about. And we're also going to be expanding popping perfectionism into a lot of different things to come. We'll explain as it comes.
As we know what's going on.
But there's a lot. There's a lot that we're going to start doing more of and a little differently. So it's going to be awesome.
Should we do quick life updates? Because, I mean, the last time we recorded was...
February. It is October.
So, Anna, catch us up to speed.
Oh, guys. Okay. Listen, lots has happened since February. Yeah. I'd say first major thing, I no longer work for Crumble Cookies. Thank you, Alicia. Alicia, who already knew that, that news.
The gasp.
I was, for lack of a better term, fired in April. It was honestly not a good fit for me anyway. And I was already thinking about leaving. Then some shady shiz went down. Did I sign an NDA in exchange for a check? Yeah.
Maybe.
Can I talk about it? Not really. But I am no longer there.
You know what kills me is that like within the past, I don't know when I got fired from the Jazz.
Last year.
How have we both been fired?
I don't know. Because seriously, Alicia and I are like star employees.
Yes.
Because we're perfectionists. That's what fuels us.
Oh, absolutely.
And we both got, within a year, both of us got fired.
Like, I just want to go back to UVU and tell our professors, guess what? Like, your two star students both got fired from our jobs. Like, how embarrassing is that?
Anyway. Yeah. So got fired, but it honestly was nice because again, I may have taken a sum of money. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of took the summer off and like traveled and was with like family, hung out with friends, just like was outside a ton, which was way nice. I've been doing comedy, which has been really fun. Yeah. I've been doing that a lot more. I've had more time for it now, which is great. I opened for Paul Elia, which guys, Paul Elia is best friends with Matthew Stephen Reif, Matt effing Reif, who I am in love with.
Yeah, he's freaking funny.
And I hugged Paul.
Yeah.
Paul's hugged Matt.
So basically you've hugged Matt.
I'm dating Matt is what's happening. We're in love.
We're together.
Yeah. But yeah, I got to open for him, which was freaking so cool. So I've been able to like lean a lot more into comedy.
Yeah.
And then again, just like hanging with friends and family. And we both had like a really low period in the summer, like a
that's putting it nicely.
Low, yeah. It was a dark time, honestly. Like it was like around like July, August. I just was like, I don't even know what really set it off. I think a lot of stuff, right? Like being fired, and there was a lot of stuff going on in my love life that was like not ideal. And it's just, you know, I think we also get to this point where, you know, I turned 27 this year and turning 27 in Utah and not being married. Yeah. Is like, it's just, there's a lot of connotation that comes with that.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know, just having to always fight this narrative in my head of like, oh, there's something wrong with me, or not even me thinking that, but thinking other people are assuming there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm 27 and still single, and like not even just single, but like single and like kind of like loving it, like doing well, you know, like still like going out and having fun and like actually living a life. So it was just like, it was a lot of that. And I don't think I've been that low in years. Like it was like you were there for it. You saw like, it was like dark. Like I had a lot of dark thoughts. I was in like a really dark place. I know you were too, which you can talk about also when we get you caught up.
Yeah.
But thankfully I just was eventually like able to, I don't even really know how it just, I mean, there's a lot of things, right? Which we, you know, we're going to talk about perfectionism, not, you know, the details of our lives, but eventually was able to pull out of it. And I'm doing better now. Mm-hmm. Still some like off days, whatever, but it was seriously like, I haven't felt that dark for that long. I feel like I've had like dark moments, but it's been, you know, a couple days at a time or even just like an hour or two. It was like weeks. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to go away. Like, I don't know if this is going to end. And then eventually it's like lightened up. But anyway, so that's basically, basically it. Yeah. I'm like trying to think if there's anything else notable that's happened to me.
I mean, you work at UVU.
I work at UVU. Okay. Yeah. I'm back at UVU. I'm a marketing director at UVU, which I love actually. I was like nervous. I didn't know if I'd like it. And like going back to my like UVU where we went to school, I like kind of felt a little ashamed where I was like, oh, I'm just back at square one. Like, I was out at Crumble in corporate America doing all these like cool things, but it's honestly been amazing.
Yeah. And I like joked about us seeing our old professors and being like, haha, we both got fired, but I'm also at UVU now in their alumni relations department. And like, Anna and I have both talked about seeing old professors or mentors and just kind of feeling like, oh, have we let them down?
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh my gosh, did you go to grad school? Did you get your master's? Nope. Did you do this? Like, where do you work now? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's been a good learning period for me. I know for you too, but just like managing expectations of life.
Yeah.
Because, and I like, I've kind of gone through this a little bit before when I got divorced, because I didn't expect that to happen in my life. Like, no one gets married with the intention of getting divorced.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was a huge, like, realization for me that life is just so unexpected. Like, you never know what's going to happen. But a comforting thought I had being back at school was like an event I went to maybe my sophomore year when I started thinking about grad school, and a bunch of communication professors were answering questions about their career path and like how they got to where they are now. And I cannot tell you, well, actually the only thing all of them had in common is that none of their lives went as planned. Like, all of them had different plans getting to UVU. None of them expected getting to UVU.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of them wanted to teach or do consulting or something like that.
Yeah.
But all of their paths were different. The one thing they had in common is that it was not linear to what they wanted. And I think perfectionists have that really hard, like, realization at some point in their lives. And that one's been hitting me like so hard over the past 4 years.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Perfectionism loves it linear.
Oh yeah.
It and just loves
predictable.
It. Yes.
Easy.
And it's how you plan. And it's because when you're a perfectionist, that's what you do all the time is you plan, right? You plan so that everything looks and is exactly how you want it to be. And then, you know, when it's not that, when it's not linear, it's like very scary.
Yeah. It's very scary.
Out. Yeah.
And I think when it's just very uncharted is what's scary, because I haven't been like a huge planner. I'm more of like a fly by the seat of my pants person historically, but life has been like planned out for me.
Okay.
Whether it's by like my faith or my family or just like societal expectations of like, this is what you do. But now it's like, oh, no one's telling me what to do. No one has given me like the map for navigating life as someone with like mental health issues, being divorced, dating, like being in a complicated situation, family, like, you know, all of these things. It's like, wait, how do I do this?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So I'm sure we're not alone in that journey.
I'm banking on us not being alone.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So other news, Anna and I also moved in together.
Oh my gosh. How did I forget that? Guys, we're roommates.
I know. Yeah. We moved in together in like July.
Yeah.
I think
July.
So that was super fun because we've never lived together. And yeah, we live in American Fork. I got a dog. He's Tony. So cute. He's like literally my dream dog. His name's Tony. And I mean, everyone knows I love Survivor, so I named him after one of my favorite Survivor players. He first won Survivor season 28. It was like Kagayan, and he's just like iconic. He changed the game of Survivor. And ever since I watched him play, I was like, I love that name for a dog. And so I named my dog Tony. He's a French bulldog. And I actually got him as an ESA because I struggle with anxiety and depression. So I'm like, okay, this dog will help me like wake up in the morning, which is the hardest task for me. One of the hardest tasks for me each day. And he has done that. We're up at like 7 or 7:30 every day so I can let him out. And the first like week or so, I was so bitter when he would wake up and I would have to wake up. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. I don't want to get up. Like with my depression, I want to sleep away like my life or the day just so I don't have to, you know, confront anything. And so then when after we would go out, like go potty, I bring him back in and he like wants to play and he's like awake and the day starts. And it was a big transition for me. I was like so annoyed at first, but now I'm like grateful because it's like that's what I wanted. Like I wanted something to like get me out of bed and get going. And he helps me stay present just like in the moment because I'm just in the moment with him. Mm-hmm. And then in moments of anxiety, he's just like the most snuggly thing ever. Aww. Like he just loves snuggling all the time. He's so cute.
He is so cute.
Yeah, he is really cute. Yeah. So there was that. I work part-time at UVU, like I mentioned, which has been good. And I'm trying to think of other updates.
I don't.
I mean, still doing CrossFit.
Yeah, she is.
There is a new season of Survivor right now. So yeah, obviously that consumes my time. I'm in like a fantasy draft for Survivor, which is fun. So awesome. And a former Survivor player is actually in my fantasy draft group, which is exciting. Dude,
that's so sick.
And let's see. Yeah, so I think, I don't know if we recorded at this time, but like in March, I believe it was, Eli and I took a break.
Yeah.
And we were apart for maybe like 6 months or something. And then we started spending time together again. So now we're like back together, trying to figure things out, you know, relationships, this whole season.
Yeah, this whole season.
Relationships.
We've been living it in our real lives.
Yeah. And like going back to life not being very linear, it's like figuring out dating post-divorce and now having all of this like trauma or life experience that I have to deal with and then dealing with like someone else and their issues and whatnot. But I think we're in a good space. And
I mean, you seem to be,
well, sorry, last update and then we'll just move on. But Eli this week, he got a call from his work that he has to go to Honduras for 3 months.
Oh,
minimum.
Yeah. Yes.
And he leaves on Friday.
Dude, that's wild that he called. They called him the week of and was like, you're like, drop your life for the next 3 months.
And I think like corporate does that a lot to people or just like businesses that are single because they're like, oh, they don't have a wife, they don't have a partner, they don't have kids, like they can up and leave whenever, right? But yeah, it's a really cool opportunity, so it'll be interesting to say the least. But anyway, with all that being said, today we're gonna wrap up season 3, which is
finally
perfectionism, romantic relationships. So, yeah, we didn't ghost you guys. Don't worry. We have to.
We just wanted to, you know, really give you guys the real experience of romantic relationships. Right. And we just had to.
Now that you've been ghosted, we'll give you closure. Like, after you've been healing from us, you've moved on from us a little bit. We're back. I'm just kidding.
This is F-boy perfectionism.
Welcome, guys.
Welcome. So. You up? What you doing?
So to wrap it up, we just kind of wanted to share some final thoughts that we have learned over the months we've been absent, but just also thoughts from like the whole season.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've like thought a lot about recently is codependency as a perfectionist. And I didn't think about it a lot until I started like going to therapy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And codependency, I should probably get like a definition for it. But basically from what I know, it's like you are dependent on someone. They are dependent on you. Your attachment styles just like blend together in the most toxic way. But also there's codependency in like familial relationships and with friends. But specifically when it comes to a romantic relationship, it is all about like control. And you like control how they feel. They control how you feel. Mm-hmm. Like your schedules have to like perfectly align. Like everything they do affects you. Everything they do is tied to who you are. Like your purpose is to make them happy. Their purpose is to make you happy. They can't set boundaries. You can't set boundaries. It's like there's no like
there's no like siloing. Like you can't be your own person. If they're having a bad day, you're having a bad day. Mm-hmm. Like you can't be separate.
And it's now your job to fix their day.
Yes.
And if you can't do it, you're failing. And if like nothing makes them happy, it's because you're not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything about your identity is tied to them and how they feel. And like your happiness is contingent on what they do. Mm-hmm. And like, anyway, I encourage you all to look into it because there's a book called Codependent No More that has pretty much like shook the world. And anyone who reads it is like, oh, I didn't know I was codependent until I read this book and it like ruined my life. And it was funny because Eli started reading it and we were going to like read it together. And he was like, so that book like attacked me.
He's like, oh, shoot. My feelings are hurt.
Like, I'm sorry. Anyway, so we've been learning a lot about codependency, and something that ties with that is just like letting go of control in any relationship, but specifically in a romantic relationship. And I know Mel Robbins, she like talks a lot about letting go, and she has like this theory called the let them theory. And long story short, like she talked about, you know, one time her kids going to prom, and like they were supposed to have this whole date planned, but nothing was planned. Everything was like crazy. Mm-hmm. The dinner place that they wanted to go to was like a taco shack that had seating for like 6 people, but they were in a group of 20.
Love it.
So Mel was like, wait, where are you guys going to sit? What are you going to do? And her daughter was like, Mom, just like let them. The older daughter that wasn't in the dance.
Okay,
she was like, let them. Who cares? And then it like started raining.
Yeah.
While they're at the taco place. And so everyone looks nice. Everyone's all done up. The girls have makeup on, guys in suits, whatever. It starts raining. And Mel's like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? You guys didn't think about this, blah, 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 blah. Her daughter's like, let them. Let them sit in the rain. Let them like have their experience. But she was like taking so much control and investing so much of herself in what they do, whether they cared or not about it, and just like had to change the situation. So just like let them.
Yes, I love that. And with that, she like took that event, and if the event didn't look how a perfect event is supposed to look, right? Mm-hmm. Again, that checklist of this is what a good event looks like, and if you check the boxes, you'll have a good time.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, they could be in the rain in the parking lot of a taco shop and still have a good time. Just let them experience what it is, whether it's a good time or not.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is with perfectionism is bad times are like so taboo, right? Like you're not allowed to have bad times. You're not allowed to acknowledge that bad times happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all needs to look good and be good all the time. And if not, then there's something wrong with you, right? The mom was like, oh my gosh, there's something wrong. And it's like, no, like this, just let them.
Yeah.
Let it be. I love that.
Even though it wasn't like what you wanted or what you thought your kid's prom would look like, let them.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they are upset in the rain, whatever, let it be. Like they learned a lesson. It's about like planning or whatever. So when it comes to romantic relationships, like just me and Eli also, you know, starting to spend more time together, we've had to have a lot of hard conversations because we obviously like broke up for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I go into these conversations, I'm like, okay, no matter how he responds, whether he's sad, upset, hurt, or even happy or whatever it might be, just let it be. Like, I have no control over how he feels. I'm not responsible for how he feels. Just like, let him.
Mm-hmm.
If he wants to be a part of my life, great, let him. If he wants to leave, let him.
Yes.
Like, let people do what they want to do and what they need to do and not have it reflect on you as a human being and like as your worth or like what purpose you serve them. It literally doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just let it. Letting go of control.
Yes. And it's so hard to let go of that control because the things that we hold on to the tightest and the things that we try to control the most are the things that are going to affect our identity, right? Because that is what is the closest to, I mean, that is our core, right? And so things that threaten that are the biggest threat. And when you're codependent and a perfectionist, someone who is seemingly attached to you, not acting perfectly or not acting how you want them to be or how you expected them to be, that threatens your identity. That is now attached to you. Where in a healthy relationship, yes, you're associated with someone, right? Like, obviously, you don't want to date someone who, you know, you feel like you have to apologize for them at every social gathering because they're obnoxious or loud or rude or whatever. But it's not attached to your identity. Mm-hmm. It is not a part of you. And so, and even then, you know, outside of a romantic relationship, again, perfectionism comes in where if you aren't the way that you wanted you to be or looking the way that you wanted yourself to look, then that control on people's perception of you is suddenly being threatened.
Yes.
And that is, again, that is the biggest threat you can encounter is threatening what your identity looks like to other people and what you think it is to yourself.
Yes.
Precisely. And so, yeah, control's a huge thing with perfectionism.
Because it's like going back to Mel Robbins, say like another mom in the neighborhood saw her and all the kids in the parking lot and it's raining, and that Mel could be like, oh my gosh, what does that neighbor think? Does she think I'm a bad mom?
Yes.
Like, great, my kids made me look like a bad mom, making them stand out in the rain, you know, like that whole path. It's just like, it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
And it's funny that perfectionism is really so egotistical in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Because all we want to do is protect our safe bubble of what other people think of us. Mm-hmm. And if we're good, if we like have control over this space, then everything's okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're good. We're everything, you know? Mm-hmm. So just letting go of that. And it's like a really hard concept. It's a hard thing to let go of how someone responds to you, of what people might think of you, what they might not think of you, who they perceive you to be. And I've learned that a lot over the past several months, but it's been really freeing, because when you do that, you no longer have to carry that weight. Like, we've talked about perfectionism being a shield. Mm-hmm. You no longer have to carry that super heavy shield of like, what do people think of me? What does my partner think of me? Like, if I do this, why is it not making them feel better? Like, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And that shield, right, is there because, and the thing is, the shield does its job. Mm-hmm. Right? It does what it's supposed to do. It does protect you. It does hide you, right? It does make it so people don't see the ugly parts of you and they don't see the scary and messy parts of you. But then, right, where the rest of the world believes mistakes should be hidden and should be shamed and that it's, you know, something that makes you different or less than, we, as, you know, as we've been talking about the concept of connectionism versus perfectionism, we know that mistakes are actually moments for increased emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
Right? They're moments for actually connecting. They're moments for deepening relationships rather than damaging them. And that's another way, right, that you can weed out which people in your life are meant to be there, right? Mm-hmm. Based on when you are messy or ugly in front of them, do they stay? How do they react to that? Mm-hmm. You know, do they make you feel better about it, right? Or are they the kind of person that's like, oh, put your shield back up. I don't want to see that. Put your shield back up. And you're like, okay, my arm's dying. Like, I am tired of hiding behind the shield. Like, that can be really telling.
Yes, very telling.
Yeah.
I can tell we haven't like podcasted in a while because I catch myself constantly going, when you're talking. And I'm like, oh, I need to shut up. But like everything you were saying is so true. And we found this quote that I think portrays nicely connectionism and perfectionism when it comes to control and codependency. It says, unlike most people, we think our mistakes and problems are evidence of our inferiority. So they only serve to reinforce the sense that we're different and less than.
Yeah.
In contrast, other people not only see mistakes and struggles as normal, they connect and form deeper bonds when they talk about them with trusted friends and loved ones. Mm-hmm. So I love that, because what we think is harming us and what we think is so dangerous isn't at all what people care about. They care about bonding with people. They care about talking about the mistakes, the struggles, the hard conversations. And it makes me think of a concept we talked about a while ago, like a staged photo versus a candid photo.
Yeah.
And some of the best pictures are candid pictures. And it's when you had no control over the staging of the photo, where your hands went, people's faces, the positioning. You just like take a photo, but it can capture the moment so beautifully because it's candid. Mm-hmm. It wasn't curated. It wasn't like, okay, now I have to cover my shirt here, make sure my hair looks perfect here. And it captures like the emotion of a moment so perfectly.
Yes.
But you have zero control over a candid photo.
Yeah. And sometimes they're really ugly. Like sometimes you look really bad.
Yeah. Oh, like, totally.
Most of the time I feel like. Mm-hmm. But that, again, that also, in my opinion, is beautiful. That sometimes it is ugly and then sometimes it's stunning, you know, like that's just how it is. But perfectionism wants to sweep all of that under the rug. And it's like, no, I will look exactly how I want to look all the time.
Yes. And perfectionism also, like, let's say you do get the candid photo. It's like, okay, now me as a perfectionist, I want to replicate that candid photo every single time I take a picture. Sorry, you can't. That's like the point of being candid.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway. Yeah.
And I think we've gotten to a bit of a dangerous point with perfectionism, where I think it's being talked about a lot now, which is great.
Yeah.
I love that it's being talked about more. There's a lot of awareness to it, but we've almost got stuck in this middle ground that I like to call progressive perfectionism, where we're addressing it or we're acknowledging it, but it's still not really, like, we're not making a lot of movement and actually fixing it. You know, it's this idea of like, okay, you know, we'll allow ourselves to have bad emotions, right? We'll admit that we're depressed sometimes or sad or lazy or whatever it is, but you can't show that you feel that way. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas before it's like, oh, I can't even feel these feelings, much less show these feelings. It's like, no, you can feel them, but you still can't look that way, right? You can feel sad, but you can't look sad. You can feel anxious, but you can't look anxious. Don't let other people know you're anxious. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, I don't know if you guys have seen the Barbie movie. I loved it.
Have I?
As I would, obviously. But I really loved, and maybe people will have hated this, but it's fine. I loved the part where Ken went up to the guy in the office building and he's like, give me a job. I'm a man, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, I thought you guys did patriarchy here. And the guy like leans in. He's like, oh, we do. He's like, we just hide it better. I feel like that's how it is with perfectionism, where it's like, oh no, we still do perfectionism. We just hide it better.
Yes.
You know? And we're in this dangerous middle ground where it's like, no, we can't get stuck here. Like you gotta keep it going to the point where you can show the ugly and the messy, not just feeling it, especially in romantic relationships.
It's this hard transition period where it's like, okay, now you're aware of it, but it's now changing that behavior, changing that mindset. That takes so much work. Mm-hmm. And it's even like, so my friend was telling me at work, she works in like a medical spa, so there's a lot of girls, and there's a lot of drama, and like people are catty or whatever. And she was telling me, like, she was in this work meeting and she's like, hey guys, we got to be doing this and this and this better. Like, we need to get our clients back there faster, our patients, blah, 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 blah. After the meeting, the girls were like, yeah. After the meeting, she said there was talk of like, wow, that was so rude. Like, she is so bossy, blah, 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 blah. But she was just trying to like do her job. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard because it's like, now we're reaching the point of maybe this like fakeness where it's like, yeah, you can have problems, you can have troubles, you can have anxiety. And then say we encounter someone who expresses this anxiety, like you said, or expresses this struggle or this like polarizing opinion or something. And then they leave and it's like, okay, wow, that was so not cute, you know?
Like, you can feel it, but don't let me see you feeling it. Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm glad you had that moment, but could you keep it to yourself? That makes me uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, my friend had this feeling and this opinion like, hey guys, we need to do this better. And we've talked about feedback in this season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, and being able to accept feedback and give feedback. So it's like, yeah, we should do that. Feedback is great. She provides feedback. And then it's like, that was rude.
Yeah. You know? Yes. Yeah, totally.
Progressive perfectionism. That's good.
Thank you.
That's really good. I love that. That also brings up another thought I've had over the past few months, and I think I touched on it a little bit, so I won't linger here too long. But the fact that hard conversations, these top like conversations we're talking about, are actually so important to have with a partner, whether you're already together or you're dating or you're expressing interest, because it's like a good test.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a good test to see like, how are they going to respond? Who are they going to be? Are they a progressive perfectionist or are they a like acting connectionist, you know, where they're going to like be in that moment with you and stick around and try and figure it out? Or is it going to repel them?
Yes. Because like you were talking about with the med spa that your friend worked at, we've talked about this before, right? That you can only hold someone else's darkness to the level that you hold your own. Mm-hmm. Right. And you can only hold your own, you know, someone else's messiness, ugliness to the level you can hold your own. And so it's very telling to me, at least, that those other girls that were like, ooh, like turned off by that. It's very telling to me that they can't hold their own messiness, right? And their own dark emotions, because they couldn't handle someone else expressing it. And that's why they're uncomfortable with that.
So true.
So, yeah, I agree
with that. So it's like, if you are like a feminist or something, and that's something important to you, but you're nervous about like dating this guy, take him to the Barbie movie. Like, see how he responds, see what conversations you can have. Like, don't avoid it. Like, do it straight up.
Yeah.
And like, see how that plays out. And if it doesn't go well, and if he's like, all of a sudden his opinion of you changes, great.
Awesome.
That's just information for you. It doesn't say, again, anything about your character. Let go of what he or she thinks and take it as information and move on.
Yes, you're just gathering information, not meaning. Just gathering information. And he gave you valuable information.
Yeah, so I love dive it. Into those hard conversations with tact.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be like on first date. So it's like, so politically, where, you know.
How do we feel about the death sentence?
Where they're like, so abortion. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to do
it. But it is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, whatever. All power to you if you want to do it. Yeah. On a first date.
Let us know how that goes. Very brave of you.
Yeah. And with perfectionism and romantic relationships, we also often get caught up in, you know, we talk about destination happiness, right? And how harmful that is mentally, where you're so focused on the destination that you forget about the journey, right? Which is a real thing. I think that destination love is also a real thing. And not only, you know, not only the thought of, oh, I'll be happy when I find love, but it's also, I'll be happy when I find the perfect love, you know, and when I find the love that I deem as perfect and as I deem in my head of what this should look like. Because it's not about, you know, finding the perfect match or finding the perfect love story or relationship. It really is about finding those layers of yourself that will naturally become revealed to you through the process of finding love. Because there's things in relationships that you just won't experience without one, right? And like, as someone who has very limited relationship experience, even in the limited experience I have, like, there's just things you learn about yourself, and there's ugliness that you see about yourself. And there's also really redeeming things you learn about yourself when you're dating someone, when you have someone else that you are openly associated with romantically. And I think it's just so important to not focus on the destination love, because perfectionism loves that, because you're just trying to get to a perfect image or a perfect lifestyle or whatever you want to call it. But that the process of weeding through the ugly and the messy and all of that jazz, you're still just as worthy, and that journey can still be just as valuable.
Yes. And if you're searching for destination love, you are sadly mistaken on what love is.
Yes.
And that's something that has been hard for me to discover. Like, after divorce, I finally figured out why people say, like, love isn't enough. Love is not enough to make a relationship work. Mm-hmm. When I tell people that, they're like, oh my gosh, like, she's so pessimistic. Like, geez, you know?
The little shoulder.
And, like, oh. So and it was funny because Eli is a romantic, like, through and through. Mm-hmm. And when we started dating, I told him that. I'm like, dude, love is not enough. He's like, Alicia, come on now. I'm like, no, I'm telling you.
You're like, I'm not having this conversation.
Yeah, you're like. And he has, like, come around to this and realized what I'm saying, because you can love someone through and through, or like have love for them, but that doesn't mean you're compatible. That doesn't mean you can like support one another. That doesn't mean that logistically like your life is going to work out. And if you're someone like me, like you can love so easily. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy for me to like find great, amazing things in people and to love them.
Yeah.
But does that mean that they're also going to love me and respect me? And it's like, what does love look like? I love the song Love is a Verb by, is it John Mayer or someone?
I don't know.
It sounds like a song he wrote.
John Mayer, I'm sure. Our boy John, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure he has.
Whatever. Long as Love is a Verb. And it talks about how like people don't fall in and out of love. They just like choose to stop loving, because love is an action.
Yes.
And it's one that is hard to keep doing when someone annoys you, when they chew too loud, when they give you an ick, when they say something that might offend you, when you figure out that they're, oh, human, and they have their own feelings and their own vulnerabilities. And it's hard to like blend those things together, but that's what makes love so rewarding. Mm-hmm. So destination love, like, you'll never get there.
Yeah.
It's not real.
No, it's not. It's really not. Like, honestly, and even, I feel like even if you got there, like, it's just, it's not sustainable either is the thing.
No.
Like, even if you somehow got there, like, it's not going to last, because the human part of all of us will eventually come out, and that's just how it always goes. My dad would always say, growing up, he would say, you never fall out of love with someone, you just stop serving them, which I think went along really well with what you just said, where it is like a choice, you know, and we think that, again, love will be enough. And love will carry us through all of the icks and all of the bad days, and it'll be there. But it's like, no, you really got to choose. Like, you really got to wake up every day and be like, I'm going to keep doing this, even if it's hard or even if it's easy, you know?
And you can choose to stop. Like, you can choose to stop loving someone. I got divorced. Mm-hmm. And I love my ex-husband. Like, I have love for him.
Yeah.
Am I in love with him? No. Like, did it work out? No, obviously. But I still love him. But like, you can also choose to stop if it's not healthy for you.
Yes.
And I think that's what's hard for some people as well. Like, when I was going through that experience, I almost like needed permission to get divorced, because it is such a like
taboo
like topic. Yeah. And especially in Utah and being a member of the church, it's like not very glamorous. It's not encouraged. It's definitely not encouraged. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, these days so many people are getting divorced. Like, why don't they stick it through anymore? It's like, maybe we're learning about boundaries. Maybe people are starting to go to therapy. Also, women can have like a bank account now without needing a man. So that's probably why too. Anyway.
Having money isn't enough anymore.
I know. So anyway, that's funny. Love that.
No, did you that's
want,
real.
Did you want to share real. This quote or not?
No, I think, well, actually, yeah, I do. Okay. I do want to, this quote I think really helps because we're going to quickly transition over into what season four is going to look like, especially with all these new changes and everything that we're doing. But I just wanted to wrap up what we were talking about in addressing the fact that a lot of problems in romantic relationships where perfectionism shows itself is because we're often operating in extremes and we're often expecting extremes and we're often planning for and hoping for extremes, right? Again, that extreme of love will take care of everything. And if I'm so in love with them, you know, you're in this extreme mindset and that's just like not how it is. And this quote says, as perfectionists, we often get stuck in all or nothing thinking, such as I'm a success or failure, or I'm attractive or I'm ugly, when in reality, there's lots of space in between these extremes, right? And other examples of this kind of thinking is overgeneralizing, catastrophizing, magical thinking, right? And there's a lot of cognitive distortions that you can look into that go, you know, go along with this psychologically. But I think in dating, this is really important because I found myself in that place where you know, that thinking, right? It's either I'm attractive or I'm ugly, mm-hmm. right? I can't be in the
middle. They're in love with me or they hate me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Right. And it's, I'm either a perfect girlfriend or I'm a horrible girlfriend. It's not like, oh, I'm actually a good girlfriend who's having a bad day. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. I'm either a perfect girlfriend or I'm a bad girlfriend. Right. And so just remembering that when you are working and operating in an extreme, that's when your like red flags should go up because that's often a default for perfectionists. And that's where a lot of harm and sabotage can come into relationships and in your relationship with yourself too.
Yeah. And that goes so beautifully with destination thinking because perfectionists also think about the outcome of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like when you meet someone, it's like, okay, we're starting to like each other. This means like we're either going to end up getting married or breaking up.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And it's like those two extremes, but it's like, whoa, what about everything in between where it's like, you could be friends and it could be great. Or like you could have a great relationship and maybe not end up being together, but you learned a lot. Like there's just so much in between those things.
Yeah. And like, even if you break up with someone, what if you both prepared each other for the person you both end up with through that relationship you had that didn't end perfectly. Mm-hmm. It was a failed relationship. You failed at a relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's like actually the best thing for both of you.
Totally.
So
yeah. You didn't fail like in anything. It's just, you learned a lot. It didn't work out. Like, shocker, you're not compatible with every human you meet on the street.
Crazy.
Another thing like with that, and I think with codependency too, is perfectionists expect their partner to like complete them somehow.
Oh yeah.
And like make everything right in their life that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. To like save them.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, you are the only person that can make yourself whole, which sounds so cheesy. It really does. And I kind of hate that I just said that on a podcast because it's like, you know, we're two girls with a podcast. It's one of the cliche like things to say, but it's true. Like no person, like your happiness isn't contingent on what someone else gives you and what someone else provides for you, just like how their happiness isn't contingent on what you provide them. Mm-hmm. It's not about providing like that service and what purpose you serve. It's just like who you are.
Yeah.
So if you're struggling in a relationship, if you're single, whatever, just like focus on yourself and serve. Like focus on fixing what's in here and also just doing good and looking outward and choosing to, you know, be vulnerable, drop the shield.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. So that's a wrap on romantic relationships. We're going to give you guys a little tease, a little look into what season four is going to look like. This is one that we are really excited about because this is a lot of what our next step for Popping Perfectionism is going to be. And season four is going to be about perfectionism in the workplace, in the career, in your job, right? Yep. That kind of an environment. And we're really excited about that because we want to take Popping Perfectionism to a few new levels. And one of those, you know, is organizational and leadership development. Mm-hmm. And that happens quite often in the workplace. So we just wanted to read some stats to you guys about how prevalent perfectionism is.
Yes.
So that you can understand how powerful this season's going to be, but then also like why it's so needed.
Yeah.
Super needed.
And I will say too, before you read all of these stats, is like, one thing I've heard a lot is that perfectionism is very much like a girl thing and yes. a girl struggle.
Yes.
But it's like, okay, perfectionism in the workplace, a lot of you guys are working, guys and girls, a lot mm-hmm. of y'all work. But like men, this includes you too. Like people that aren't in a romantic relationship or are not a member of the church or whatever we've talked about previously, like this very much affects everyone on yeah. a very, very real level. And these stats will open your eyes to that this does apply to you. You need this podcast.
Yeah, totally. So a couple stats up front, 92% of respondents consider themselves perfectionists. This is from a panel of 1,200 people. So it's pretty decent sample size. Mm-hmm. 92%, 72% believe perfectionism leads to anxiety and depression, which we know mm-hmm. that it basically always does. So yeah. that's a little low, if we're being honest. 68% believe perfectionism leads to burnout. 46% believe perfectionism causes high workplace turnover. We know that it does. 86% believe that work is impacted by perfectionist expectations. So people are cueing into the fact that this is dangerous and damaging. 66% believe perfectionism leads to the fear of failure and conflict avoidance, also huge in the workplace. 40% take criticism and negative feedback more or too seriously because of perfectionism. That one I relate to a ton.
Yeah.
Because that can be so hard. There's a book by, what's her name? Shoot, what's her name? It's called Radical Candor.
Oh, flip.
What's her name?
I can't remember. You guys can look it up. Save my life.
Amazing book. Basically, the summary of the book is can be summarized in one line. And it's basically like if someone had something in their teeth, or if you had something in your teeth, what do you want someone to tell you that yeah. you did?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, of course. And that is, you know, the whole premise of the book where it's like, if someone has a blind spot, even though it's uncomfortable and like, you don't want to be the person to have to tell them. I hate telling people they have something in their teeth. I never know how to do it without being like so awkward, but like you're doing them a favor by pointing yeah. that out. Right. And doing it tactfully and gently and all that jazz. But this one's huge where you take negative feedback too seriously because then everyone is afraid to give you feedback. Mm-hmm. No, everyone is hesitant and honestly like nervous and scared to give you feedback because they don't know if you can handle it. They don't know if you're going to, you know, emotionally shut down or beat yourself yeah. up when really they also just don't know. Help you.
Yes. And yeah. they also don't know what you might think of them. Like, are you yeah. a rude manager? Are you yeah. some, like, it just, it's so much. And if you look at all these stats, okay. So if this is all true, which is from the Hardin Group. This
yeah.
is
and they do tons of research in perfectionism. Yeah. And especially in the workplace.
They're big in like leadership and organizational mm-hmm. development, yeah. whatever. So if all of these are true, it means we have workplaces that are like so, what's the word? Poisoned with anxiety and depression, people who are burned out, workplaces with high turnover, which is expensive mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and like a waste of time, feels like. We have workplaces that have a lot of high expectations for people that they can't meet, circles back to anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
We have workplaces where people are just constantly afraid of conflict, failure, you know, falling short, all fear of all these things, mm-hmm. which also means then we have workplaces that are not creative.
Yes.
Because they won't innovate. We have workplaces where people don't feel safe. They can't be authentic, which means they can't connect, which means they're probably not happy. Mm-hmm. So perfectionism is like quite literally destroying productivity, creativity, like all of these things, teamwork, collaboration, conflict resolution, leadership skills, like mm-hmm. giving and providing feedback. And in season four, we're just going to dig into what do we do about this, right?
Yeah.
How can we become connectionists in the workplace and help resolve, at least not resolve, just like combat these struggles that are very human?
Yes. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, if most of us are working full time, we're spending 40 hours a week at a minimum in these environments. And if these environments, if these environments are being fueled by perfectionism, that's going to bleed into the rest of the areas of your life. Like it just is, right? Mm-hmm. It's not possible. I don't know if you guys have seen the TV show Severance, but it's not possible to live that life, right? Where your work life ends when you get home. And if you're living in 40 hours a week in a perfectionist environment, that's going to bleed into everything else mm-hmm. and vice versa, yep. right? And so we want to help nip it in the bud and just give you tools and ways to recognize it and be able to, you know, even if you're not the CEO of the company, make some change on your team. Even if you're a team of one, make yep. change for yourself, you know?
Yeah, because you very much can.
Yeah.
Some other interesting information we found is about, it was like a article about artists, specifically with like painting, drawing, sculpture, that kind of arts. What would we even call that? I guess it would also bleed into the art of like dance and whatever, all of these things. But it talks specifically about how perfectionism is the very thing that stops creativity. It stops artists from creating. And it said they are paralyzed by the blank page. They're paralyzed by a good beginning. They're scared of a good beginning. They're scared of failure. They're scared of success. This is the part that killed me. This is so crazy. They are paralyzed by their last failed art piece and their last successful art piece.
I relate to that.
Isn't that so funny?
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh no, with that bad project or that bad art piece or that bad performance, like what if I do that again? So it paralyzes them from creating. But then let's say even, okay, it went well. Let's flip the reality. It was amazing. The best one ever. Now it's like, oh, how do I live up to that?
Yes.
Like it's so much pressure.
Yeah.
And imagine like if people weren't paralyzed by this fear of either succeeding or failing, how much more would be created?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a darn shame.
It honestly is. And like, I always tell people, I feel like it's on often like discussion point. I don't know why we as humans talk about this all the time, but everyone's always like, oh, what's your greatest fear? You know, what's your greatest fear? Mm-hmm. Obviously like spiders for me, for sure. But if we want to get like psychological, like I hate spiders.
Yeah, I'm like, really,
I hate them so much. I'm like, that's it. My biggest fear is not living up to my first impression at all times, in all things. Like, I feel like I was just quoting like in all times, all things, all places, but like genuinely, like I'm just so like when someone meets me for the first time, I feel like when I meet people, I'm very much in my element, right? I'm one of, if not the best version of myself often when I'm meeting someone. And after I meet someone for the first time, I'm like, I hope I never see them again because like, I'm just scared that the more they get to know me, the more they'll like regret it or like that impression will fade, right? And so I so relate to that where it's like your last successful encounter, you're afraid of that because it's like, yeah. How do I live up to that? And that's, you know, a list of 10 other things to be afraid of when it comes to being a perfectionist and creating. And the workplace is where you should be creative. You should be your most creative in some aspects. So,
and that's so interesting because it just goes back to everything we've talked about in season one and all of this. It's like perfectionists think that their value is tied in their achievements and what they like provide for someone. Mm-hmm. But that's not like, that's not the case at all. You know? So interesting. We clearly have so much to talk about in season four.
And we're so excited.
We're so excited.
It's honestly going to be so good. And we're going to be able to have, you know, more opinions than just ours this season and more people to chime in. So we're excited.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you want to take us into the...
Should we do some takeaways?
Every time. I don't know if any of you know this. I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast, but like I get so much anxiety for people who like perform specifically with singing or like a musical piece because I'm just scared they're gonna mess up and I get like that secondhand anxiety. It must come from when I was a child and I was like terrified of performing in front of people because I didn't want to mess up. My biggest fear. So you nail the takeaways every time, but just that for some reason that time right before you took the breath to sing takeaways, I was like, what if it's like so bad?
Alicia, every time I've ever said it, you just have like a mini panic attack. Like, you're like, please be okay.
I don't know why. It's just like all in like that split second. I was like, these mics are so clear. What if like her voice cracks? What if she just like, literally who cares? Me, apparently.
That's hilarious.
I know. Oh my gosh.
Oh geez. We listen back and it's just like horrible.
Anyway,
let's do some takeaways.
Okay.
First takeaway, progressive perfectionism is dangerous. Watch out for it. Look out for it. Be aware because it is.
Mm-hmm. Number two, perfectionism loves control because it loves predictability. Practice letting go. Let it go. Mm-hmm. Let them theory. Thank you, Mel Robbins.
Mm-hmm. And the third one is imperfect art moves people.
Yes.
So don't be afraid to be imperfect.
Get out there, create.
Yeah.
Listen to season four.
Please.
Please. Yeah. So that's all for today. Please leave a review for us. That would be amazing in helping our podcast grow. So review, rate, share it if you feel so inclined, and look for the next episode.
Yep. My name's Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.